I call the House Labor and Commerce Committee at 3:20 on Monday, April 4th. We're going to start with confirmations. So I see online we have Lena Lafferty with the Board of Nursing. Ms. Lafferty, please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Hi, my name is Lena M. Lafferty, and I am a reappointment to the Board of Nursing. I'm holding the registered nurse position. I have been in Alaska for almost 16 years. I came up here with my husband, who was an active duty Marine, and we stayed up here. I was in the Navy for 10 years as a hospital corpsman, got out, and I've been lucky enough to be a nurse for almost 8 years. I work over at Providence. I work in the operating room, and I have been lucky to have been on the board for the past couple of years, getting our mission accomplished, actively promoting and protecting the health of the citizens of Alaska through safe and effective practices of nursing, as defined by law. We've gone through a pandemic, as everyone knows. So we have tried to make the life of our nurses easier while also protecting the citizens. Well, an example of that was when we were supposed to raise the fees for the licensing, right as the pandemic was right in the middle of it. It was decided that it might be best to not raise them because nurses have a lot of work on their hands. And as you know, we work hard, we work all the time. And so we were decided that maybe we shouldn't do that. So we decided as a board not to do that. We also lessened the number of CEUs for those who were re-upping their nursing licenses. Also, I spoke to this back last year when I was doing my confirmation for my first confirmation, was that I was trying to get LPNs to be able, once they leave the military, to be able to challenge the board, the LPN board, so they would have a swift, you know, workplace as a veteran, getting out of the military and straight into the job that they love. And we are 99% close to getting it accomplished. It is right now up for verbal comments. So if anybody wants to go read that, that's on the Alaska Board of Nursing website. And then that will close on the 13th of April. And then hopefully we will be able to get that signed into regulation. So that's quite exciting. And then also, my goal is to hopefully be able to also include hospital corpsmen, me being one. I, of course, am biased for that. So that is one of my goals. And just working together with the board, getting things done, getting them accomplished. And I'm very grateful to be renominated. And I answer any questions if you have them.
Thanks, Ms. Lafferty. Do committee members have questions? Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, thank you, Ms. Lafferty, for your service to our state through the Board of Nursing. It's certainly been a busy time for the Board of Nursing in light of COVID, so thanks for all of that. Can you tell us, how do you feel about the amount of the length of time that it takes for licenses to get processed on the part of nurses?
Well, as you know, it does take time. We did have a thing for emergency licensing that we were able to pull through. It's a lot of work, and it takes time. And we have not the board itself, but obviously the people that work for the board through the state. They work tirelessly to try and make sure that that you dot all your I's and cross all the T's, making sure that the people that are coming up here, we would want and you would want to have your family members and yourself being taken care of, make sure that their licenses are unencumbered, make sure that they filled out all the paperwork and any information is done correctly. So there are certain things that would help that, but I think that's for another time and date. But that, unfortunately, with and I am honestly discussing about the NLC compact, but like I said, that's for another time and date, but that it is, unfortunately, is a long process. But I know that the people that work through the nursing board are working tirelessly to try and get that stuff taken care of so that it makes it makes it quicker once the nurses get here to be able to get on the ground and start working.
All right, thank you.
Okay, not seeing further questions. Thanks, Ms. Lafferty, for your testimony. Next, Paula Harrison with the Alaska Labor on the Alaska Labor Relations Agency. Ms. Harrison, please proceed with your testimony, and thanks for being here.
Hi, my name is Paula Harrison, and I am also a reappointment to the Alaska Labor Relations Agency. I served a full 3-year term and look forward to continuing to serve. I have 40 years of experience in human resources and labor relations, or this is my 40th year, I should say. It will be 40 years come August. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to continue to serve. I think we have a really good agency, a very small agency, but they do a very big job for the state of Alaska.
Thank you, Ms. Harrison. Are there questions from committee members? Not seeing any at this time, Ms. Harrison. Actually, hold on a second, Ms. Harrison.
Ms. Harrison, we don't have any documents for you.
History, maybe? Is that what you're looking for through the chair?
Sure.
Employment history?
No, I just don't have it. I don't have a resume or any documents for you. So that might have just gotten, there might be some communication gap there.
Ms. Harrison, maybe you could just send us your resume. And if committee members have further questions, we'll let you know.
Okay. Where do I send that resume through the chair?
You can send it to Representative Sponholz and I. It's rep.ivy.sponholz and rep.zach.fields@akleg.gov.
Okay, I will certainly do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Harrison. Next up, appointees to the Marijuana Control Board. First up, Eli Cyrus. Mr. Cyrus, please proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon through the chair. Thank you for the consideration today. My name is Eli Cyrus from Cayena. I'm a lifelong resident of Cayena. I saw the opening for the Marijuana Control Board last fall, and as a city administrator here in Cayena, we operate a beverage package store. And, you know, I know the similarities between alcohol and marijuana are similar. So that's kind of where my interest was in serving on this board. I see marijuana, the industry as a whole, is a really good opportunity, especially for rural Alaska. You know, there's just so much growth or potential out there for retail establishments, groweries, and all the other employment opportunities that come along with marijuana in the state. And I really applaud the state for being progressive and, you know, moving the industry and allowing the industry to grow to where it is today. And I think it's really setting up a bright future for Alaska once, you know, the federal laws, the archaic, in my opinion, federal laws regarding marijuana are off the table. I think it'll put Alaska in a really good place in the future. I believe all my information is on the application packets. I served on our tribal councils and city councils since I was 18. I'm 31 now. I was also on the Regional Corporation Board up here, and previously I was the chairman for Nana Development Corporation and vice chairman for Nana Regional Corporation. I've been the city manager for Cayena for about 4 years now, and I'm also the president of the Native Village of Cayena. And if you guys have any other questions, I'm happy to answer them, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Cyrus. Do committee members have questions? I'm not seeing any at this time. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, an appointee to the Marijuana Control Board is Eliza Muse. Ms. Muse, do you want to proceed with your testimony?
Sure. Thanks so much. I am on Teams today, and I'm hearing feedback. I wonder how I can...
Go ahead. The sound is okay.
Okay. Thanks. So my name is Eliza Muse, and I've been appointed by the governor to serve on the Marijuana Control Board. As the public health representative, I'm a lifelong Alaskan with a master's degree in health policy and administration. I worked in state government with the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Public Health since 2011. I have tracked cannabis policy since the ballot initiative in 2014, and as part of the Division of Public Health, have participated in efforts to understand health and safety implications for Alaskans resulting from increased access to cannabis products. I've worked to put in place a system for collecting data to help us understand how cannabis use is changing over time for both adults and youth, as well as developed reports to summarize those findings. I also developed what is now the Positive Youth Development After School Program, which funds quality after school programs statewide, which is a known protective factor for reducing youth cannabis use. I want to serve on this board because I believe in and support a well-regulated cannabis industry. A well-regulated industry will balance the needs of consumers with that of public health to ensure that products are safely available, tested, labeled in a way that makes sense, and packaged in a child-proof manner. My record and actions taken on the board to date are proof that I believe in this industry and want to see it succeed. I do believe that a key to its success is when public health has a voice, and that is my role of this 5-person board. I will bring to the board my training in public health, knowledge of the data systems we use to understand the health impacts of cannabis use, and willingness to work with other board members and industry to ensure that rulemaking continues to be accomplished in a manner that balances both industry and public health. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to any questions that you might have.
Do committee members have questions? I have a question. So, Ms. Muse, you're currently employed by the Department of Health and Social Services?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And as an appointee to the board, you will be voicing your personal views about marijuana regulation. Is that right? You're not formally a representative of the department. You're serving as a public health expert who happens to be employed by the department.
Thank you for the question, Representative Fields. That's exactly correct. To date, the department has been on the record for, opposing certain public health or certain regulations. But my role on this board is to represent the general public health and only and not the opinions or the positions of the Department of Health and Social Services. I really see those two as being separate. And this is a confirmation to me representing the general public health of all Alaskans and not my day job with the Department of Health and Social Services. Thank you.
Okay. When you applied, was there guidance from the department on kind of what, if there are other departmental employees who are members of boards and commissions representing themselves, but not the department? Does this happen very frequently, or would your service on this board be sort of a new thing for a current state employee who also professionally works in this public policy space?
Representative Zach Fields, that's a great question. I believe the other public safety seat as part of the Marijuana Control Board also works as a state of Alaska employee. My understanding of the statutory requirement of this board is that the position may be filled by someone who works in public health, either at the federal, state, or local level, and it may be a government employee.
Great. Well, thank you for stepping up to serve and for putting your expertise to work. I don't see further questions from committee members at this time.
I will just actually make a note.
Okay.
And I don't have a question, but just wanted to comment that I remember actually when we put the public health seat into the statute regarding this, and that the idea was that having that expertise on the board would help inform our policy moving forward. So it's nice to see that practice and happening. And thanks so much to Ms. Muse for describing the analogous law enforcement officer position that's also on the marijuana board. Thanks.
Thanks. And please don't take my questions as hostile. I appreciate you lending your extra time to serve on that board. I was just curious if departmental employees encounter this very frequently. So next up, we have Alcohol Beverage Control Board appointees Janice Hill and Douglas Moore. Ms. Hill, please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much for your consideration this afternoon. My name is Janice Hill, and I am proud to say I'm a lifelong resident of Haines. And I've spent a lot of my adult life in service to my community and our region, and even at times at the state level. When I recently became retired from being mayor, which I had served as Haynesboro mayor four terms, my first one, we were still actually a third-class borough, so I'm sort of dating myself with that piece of information. But recently, when I was retired from being mayor, I very quickly realized that I am not very good at being retired. So I was quickly finding things and looking for things to do, meaningful things, ways to serve in the community and in the region. And so I currently sit on the Southeast Conference Board of Directors. I serve as a counselor on the Chilkoot Indian Association Tribal Council. I'm also a director for the Search Board of Directors and serve on the Alaska Miners Association Board of Directors, and have for many years served on the Lynn Pinnell Icy Strait Resource Advisory Committee. When I was looking for meaningful ways to use my time, I found that I went to the boards and commissions online and found there was an opening in the Alcohol Beverage Control Board, and it jumped right off the page at me because when I served on the Alaska Native Health Board, I was actually appointed to the Title IV steering committee that was working on rewriting Title IV. And it was a very interesting assignment, and I actually testified before the legislature a couple of times when on the bill that is still in the legislature. And I just felt like I could bring a small town perspective with my variety of experiences to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. As you're probably aware, I've served for several months already waiting on confirmation and have thoroughly enjoyed getting to know the board and getting to become more familiar again with the statutes and with exactly what this board does. So I am looking forward to any questions that you might have that I can help clarify my position or my desire to serve, and want to thank you again for your consideration of my appointment.
Thanks, Ms. Hill. Do committee members have questions? Representative Strage.
Yeah, not a question, but just wanted to say thanks for stepping up, and it's always good to hear of others just going out of their own goodwill to seek out opportunities to get engaged and give back to their community. So thank you very much. It's encouraging.
Thank you.
Not seeing further questions, thanks, Ms. Hill, for testifying. Next up on the ABC board is Douglas Moore, and I think Mr. Moore is on team. So, Mr. Moore, go ahead and unmute yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Moore. I was appointed to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board and was started serving roughly in May last year. I have participated in 4 meetings so far, and I'd like to say that Ms. Hill has been an absolute inspiration to me. I thought I volunteered for a lot of stuff, and I didn't actually realize how much Jan did, and that's amazing. I'm a 41-year resident of Talkeetna, Alaska. For 25 years, I've owned my own business in Talkeetna. Second generation, purchased it from my parents. I'd just like to say that I've greatly enjoyed being on the ABC board. The members of the board, this is probably, I've been a participant or a board member in probably 10 different boards over my adult life, and this has been the most professional and thoughtful group I've ever been part of. I also like to say that Director Klinkhart has been doing an amazing job of taking over the AMCO for the state level. I appreciate your consideration, and I'm open for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sponholz has a question.
Yeah, I thought I had a question, but it looks like I found the answer to it. It looks like you're of the Moores from Moores Hardware.
Yes, ma'am. That is correct. Yeah.
I have spent about spent much of the last 35 years of my life going back and forth, driving past Moore's, and spent a lot of money in your shop over the years as my family's got cracks.
We greatly appreciate that. We do.
Cracks from up the tracks from Talkeetna.
Right on. Thank you.
Additional questions from committee members? Not hearing any. Thank you, Mr. Moore, for testifying today. Final appointee to testify today is Sterling Strait, nominee of the State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors. Mr. Strait, please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today. My name is Sterling Strait. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I am a trained structural engineer, and I am applying to join the Alaska Board of Registration for, it's the mouthful. We have architects, engineers, land surveyors, and I think that's it. Sorry. Thank you for your time. As I mentioned, I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I'm excited to be part of this board, if you'll let me. My background is in engineering. I have been an engineer in Alaska for 15 years now or so. And I was raised to try to look for ways to give back. So that's something I've tried to do through my career. I've given back on various public and private boards, commissions, groups, entities, professional organizations. And I see this is really kind of the pinnacle in my industry as an engineer to be able to give back on this board of registration to help look into issues and guide my profession as an engineer in Alaska. So very excited to take part. And thank you very much for your time and having me on today.
Thank you. Do committee members have questions? Representative Fonholz.
Yeah. Mr. Strait, are you a mechanical engineer?
I am a civil structural engineer.
Civil
and primarily structural, which is a subcategory. So.
All right. Thank you.
Do other committee members have questions? Okay. Thanks to the nominee. Thank you, Mr. Strait. Thanks to all the nominees for appearing today. I should have noted earlier that in addition to Representative Shragi, Fonholz, and myself, in person, Representative Snyder is on the phone. At this time, we're going to go to House Bill 312, introduced by Representative Tarr. This is the first hearing on the bill. Representative Tarr, would you like to introduce the bill?
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present House Bill 312 that prohibits schools and workplaces from enacting dress codes that restrict someone from wearing their natural hair. I want to say thank you to Senator Wilson, who we're working on this bill with, and he has the companion that's come over from the Senate. When we think about thinking about the school component, we often talk about how important it is for student success, for students to feel welcome and included in their school. We believe this policy will help a student to feel welcome and included when they walk through the doors. It's important because we want the school to be a positive learning experience, and we know that students' academic achievement improves when they feel welcome and included in their school environment. House Bill 312 will also ensure that no employee would be prohibited from participating in work or attending school because they're wearing natural hair. We know that's really important because people rely on their job. And, you know, as a matter of having a strong non-discrimination policy, this would speak to that and, you know, prohibit any discrimination. And I think reflects sort of an evolution in what people understand and know. One of the things that I think has been great coming out of the discussions for this legislation is that people have learned a lot more about, you know, what a natural hairstyle is and why it's important that these protective hairstyles be allowed. And also you'll hear in the invited testimony, just, you know, absent policies like that, it's has been particularly for Black women we've heard a lot from, can be very damaging because of the chemicals and procedures that are used to otherwise alter their natural hair. So, when we think about, you know, the importance of having employment, really something, you know, that's really inherent in who you are as a person should be included. HB 312 defines what standards are unacceptable for school districts and employers to place on hair. This clarity and policy statement is the right thing to do. I believe because we were uncertain about invited testimony that we just have one person who's called in today, and I hope, you know, I've heard their testimony before. It's excellent. We have a couple of others that have previously participated, and if the committee wishes, you know, we could invite them at a future hearing. But we're thankful that she was able to join. And folks may have heard in the news, the U.S. House recently passed what's called the Crown Act. That's the national version of this legislation. And this legislation has been passed in 14 states and 34 municipalities. And if you go to the Dove website, which is the Dove brand for soap, they're actually a corporate sponsor and participant in this national effort. And, you know, there are more testimonials on there. And, you know, in case that's helpful for folks to understand a little bit more, it may be a topic they haven't really considered before. It's pretty inspiring to think that Alaska could join with these other 14 states and 34 municipalities in really, you know, making this solid policy statement and making sure in both the workplace and schools that every individual feels, you know, welcome, included, and that it's a safe space where they can be who they are. So with that, I would let Mr. Song, if you're interested, do the sectional.
Sure, that's fine. And then I do see Alyssa Quinton is online, and we can go to invite testimony after the sectional.
For the record, David Song, staff representative TAR. So HB 312, section 1 adds a new section 135 relating to dress codes and natural hairstyles to Title 14 relating to education, libraries, and museums, Chapter 3, public schools generally. This section disallows a school district from adopting a school dress code that prohibits a student from wearing a hairstyle that is commonly or historically associated with race. Wearing a natural hairstyle regardless of the student's hair texture or type or requires a student to permanently or semi-permanently alter their natural hair. And the bill makes an exception to allow school districts to restrict hairstyles in any way necessary to comply with existing health or safety laws. Section 2 adds a new section 450 related to dress codes and natural hairstyles to Title 23, which is related to labor and workers' compensation, Chapter 10, employment practices and working conditions. And this section is identical to section 1, except it deals with an employee-employer relationship rather than school and students. And that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Song. Let's go to invited testimony with Alyssa Quintine. Ms. Quintine, please proceed with your testimony.
Hi, good afternoon. Everyone can hear me?
Yes.
All right. Well, my name is Alyssa Quinton. I am an organizer and creative here in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I've been here for 20-plus years. Thank you for Representative Carr and staff for being so diligent and getting this through the House. And also want to thank Senator Wilson and their staff for this bill being passed through the Senate. It's really exciting to see. Really where I want to start is just acknowledging that discrimination, in particular hair discrimination, is just a part of life when you are Black in Alaska. Every single Black person I know has been harassed, has been touched, and sent from work, sent from home, or sent home from school, or had to talk about their hair and their hairstyles at work at some point in their life. And I always like to leave a little bit of room because there is always somebody that has it worse than you, but I really do feel that, you know, everything that you could have happened to you about your hair, I've had happen. I have honestly been put it through the ringer, through elementary to high school. Arctic like through a Sally here in the interior when it comes to my hair. I've had classmates and teachers and administrators use inappropriate comments and words and inappropriate questions about my hair. I've been barred from chemistry classes and home ec and swimming because of my hair. I have been put on the spot and asked to defend why our hair is bushy or smells weird or is dirty or doesn't grow from various teachers. I've been yanked and I've been thrown down the stairs by my hair. I've had my hair cut and burned in the classroom. And I've been tied to bus poles by my braids. And of course, you know, my parents and all the appropriate people who needed to be involved were involved, but nothing really came of it. When as I grew up and started working, it was unfortunately no better. It's easier for me to say that the only place I haven't experienced hair discrimination is the place I work in now. And I've worked in all different places from customer service to university departments, your training facilities and labs and various organizations. So to kind of give you context of, you know, where I've worked in the interior. I've had the touching, I've had the comments, I've had the questions, but really what made it a dire situation is when I would have HR departments write policies specifically targeting and banning my hair and my hairstyles. And it's even more apparent when you're usually the only Black person that works at that organization or in that department. I have been given ultimatums from supervisors and from HR leads to come to work with my hair straight or do not come back at all. And when you are a young adult, you know, you work two jobs and you're in college, you don't really have a choice. You have to do what you have to do to survive. Throughout my life, I've really tried to address this problem on my own in the community to no avail. If any of you are interested, I'm pretty sure there's still testimonies. If you go to the Fairbanks North Star Rural School District's board, their audio meetings, I'm pretty sure there's still testimony back when I was 13, so probably the mid-2000s, me begging them to change that dress code because it was discriminatory. I just termed off of the district's diversity committee after 3 years, and I worked with the school board and the district admin specifically on the dress code when it came to hair and tried to educate them when it came to bonnets and do-rags, educated them on natural and protective hairstyles and why the whole gang-affiliated rhetoric and language was completely unacceptable and irrelevant. It was nothing but a racial microaggression rooted in fear that targeted Black and Indigenous students. I gave them resources and suggestions on how to make dress codes more responsible and aware to students' financial access and cultures and identities and expressions. I don't know if they actually took those suggestions, but, you know, you can pretty much look in our local news and you can see how our district is going there. As a kid and as a young adult, I think it's really easy for people to dismiss a problem like this because it's not there every day. If you don't have to deal with this kind of discrimination every day, you're not really going to understand how detrimental it is. They tell you to just stand up for yourself, to tell a teacher, to tell HR. But when that is exactly where you're facing this harm from, when you have random strangers that yank you by your twist to see if it's real, when the city council won't do anything because it's a lower 48 problem and it doesn't happen here, your borough assembly is second class and they throw up their hands because they don't know what to do, when the school board is the very source of your trauma and pain, and when there's nothing really happening in the legislature yet, when you have to fight your local Walmart or your Fred Meyer and all your different grocery stores from locking up your hair products that you need to take care of your hair, when there's not really a lot of salons or hair places that carry the products or can even do your hair because it's unmanageable or it's too nappy or it's too hard or they just don't have the expertise to do it. And when the only people that really understand what you're going through are your own friends and your mom, exactly what are Black kids supposed to do? And I say all this to really give you a context of what not just myself, but so many Black Alaskans go through. We're exhausted and we've tried all we can. And to see this legislation pass the House has given the Black community a lot of hope that our white colleagues and leaders in the legislature are finally understanding what it means to not just be friends, but to be neighbors to their Black constituents and their Black friends, to understand a little bit more about what we're going through and why it's so important to not just wait for us and, you know, the only two Black legislators that are working on this bill, but really needing to stand up and take a stand for our communities marginalized. It gives me hope that this will, you know, create a much needed conversation about discrimination and microaggressions and lateral violence. And it most importantly gives me hope that the pain and the violence that I and so many other people went through both in school and in work, can be prevented for another tiny little black girl with twists and braids, and she could take up as much space as she needs in class, and that when she grows up, she grows out of love and not out of survival. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Quinton, for that testimony. Do committee members have questions? Not seeing any. Representative Tarr, we can return to additional invited testimony at future hearings if we need to. And I think the Senate companion did pass today, so that's exciting. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else to add for the committee?
Just thank you, Ms. Quinton, for sharing your testimony again. And of course, it's not a personal experience that I can share. And so I just appreciate, and it's like when, I guess I just feel like it's one of those experiences where, you know, I'm just thankful that people are willing to come forward and have to, you know, share those stories. There's a level of vulnerability that we ask from people when we ask them to participate in this way. And I'm thankful that there are people who are willing to help us educate and understand, because as she said, you know, if everyone, you know, she knows all of her black friends, family members have all experienced this, that means we have a lot of friends and neighbors who have been experiencing pain, and we're in a position to do something about it and prevent it. And so I'm just really grateful that you would schedule the hearing today, and that we'll hopefully in the remaining time be able to get this legislation through. Thank you.
All right. Yes, I hope so. And Ms. Quinton, just, you know, I look forward to returning to this after we get the budget done. So probably next week, because that'll take a few days. Okay. Thank you again, Representative Tarr, your staff, and Ms. Quinton for presenting House Bill 312. Next up on the agenda today is House Bill 108, Concurrent Secondary and Trade School CTE Programs. I know that Representative McCarty is not here today, but his staff is here. And Ms. Harnett, Mr. Harnett, do you just want to put yourself on record?
Yeah, could I ask it brief at ease so I could call my boss? call Representative McCarty. He
wants brief at ease. Back on the record, so I think Representative McCarty is online for House Bill 108. This is the first hearing. And Representative McCarty, do you want to introduce your bill?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Field. So I'd like to introduce House Bill 108, which is a bill regarding trade training, certification training for secondary education for high school students. And the purpose of this is that we have concurrent enrollment for college, for our high school students to go to college and get credit in high school and college. But we don't have such for trade training and such. And this would avail the trade and kids who want to go in the trades. And it avails many other things, several, one of which is availing master tradespeople to assist our secondary education programs with their skill sets in the trades to train our students to get actual national accreditation certification in that process. It also avails, extends what a family can avail. So if the students are currently their parents, if they have a job or our employers, student or child can work for the parents, but they can't work for their grandparents or the auntie or uncle or even older siblings. And so the bill would avail extended family to do those things without so much OSHA intrusion to that. And then on that, it actually extends the ability for students to be in the workforce from the age of 17 to start to drop it to the age of 16, and availing an extra hour of work, being 10 o'clock p.m. for the student to have to quit working. So a number of different factors there. The big thing is that we are in big need for a strong workforce. We have the infrastructure money coming in, and the big cry out is to have a workforce from Alaska. Our employers in Alaska are saying we would like to have employees that will stay the long term, and those that already live here are to show that they're staying the long term rather than someone that just comes up for a visit for a few years working. And then it gives actual connection in our secondary education for our students, so that they ask the question, you know, when am I going to use this in real life? Well, here's real life application to their studies. And we see this at Avtech, where students are struggling in secondary, and then they go out to Avtech, and now they're doing trigonometry and things like that they couldn't do, but they can apply it. So a lot of wonderful things to this, and a great response. And I'll turn it to Eugene to go through the sectional, and I'll be available for questions.
Thanks. Although, Representative McCarty and Mr. Harnett, why don't we go straight to invited testimony, just because we have a lot of people online, and I want to make sure we hear them all. And then we'll do the sectional, if that's okay.
That's great.
So first up, and thanks everyone for calling in, first up is Jamie Burgess. Superintendent Burgess, please proceed. Go ahead, Superintendent Burgess. I think we just need to unmute you.
Yeah. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Thank you, Chairman Fields. For the record, my name is Jamie Burgess. I'm the superintendent for Nunavut Schools. I'm here to speak in support of House Bill 108, which asks all districts to provide the opportunity for students to participate in high-quality certified concurrent vocational education in high school. This is the equivalent of providing dual enrollment for college credits, and this is desperately needed in today's rapidly changing workplace. While it's true that providing these programs may provide some particular challenges for rural districts, it is also true that these districts are in the greatest need of skilled individuals in the trades to support their communities. Too often in rural communities such as mine, electricians, construction workers, welders, boiler technicians, plumbers, and other tradesmen have to be brought in from Anchorage or Fairbanks for projects or to service residential needs, as there is a lack of skilled labor locally. Or if there are any local skilled companies or individuals, they are often overwhelmed with work. The need is great, and the pipeline for new workers at the local level and rural areas is down to a trickle or completely absent. I recognize there is often a concern for how small and rural districts will find a way to provide these types of programs, when there may be only a few or even just a single student interested in participating. And there may also be a lack of a qualified instructor as defined in the language of the bill, or the inability to offer enough classes or practicum hours for a few students to make an appropriate program a reality in a small school setting. However, small rural districts often collaborate amongst themselves with a larger rural district, or may even partner with a road district in order to provide programs and services to their students. The Department of Education can function as a centralized clearinghouse of information or a source of support to connect districts through its CTE department. Perkins grant funding can potentially be utilized to support these programs, as well as other grant programs such as Indian Education, AMSEP, or ANEP. Nome and Bering Strait School District have a joint CTE program that's called NACTEC, which stands for the Northwest Arctic Career and Technical Education Center. This utilizes an intensive 2 to 3 week residential program where students from a village school fly into Nome to garner the hours needed in a variety of programs, from healthcare to aviation to welding or construction. This model provides students with an opportunity to earn the hours that are needed for industry certification while still keeping them enrolled in their home school and on track with their normal classes, as they spend several hours each evening working on assignments from their regular classes. They still have makeup work to do when they go back home, but the program provides them an opportunity that they do not have at their home school. The students are initially provided a one-week introduction to the program while they're in middle school that allows them to see what types of courses will eventually be available, and then they apply to the various individual intensive programs once they are in high school. Again, while I acknowledge that there may be challenges in finding a way to make these programs happen for some rural students,
I ask you not to count out Alaskan ingenuity, problem solving, and creativity on the part of superintendents, principals, directors, and teachers as well. I hope you will consider moving this bill forward and allow districts and students to have some opportunities, potentially life-changing educational opportunities in high school, and to be better prepared for the rapidly evolving workforce in Alaska. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Burgess. Do committee members have questions? Not seeing any. Next up in public testimony is Maggie Cothran. Ms. Cothran, please proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, hello?
We can hear you, Ms. Cothran. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Well, hello, I'm Maggie Cothran, and I'm a student from the Anchorage School District, and I support House Bill 108. It will not only give students like me, especially those around the state, more opportunities, but may realize the importance of their regular classes and how it could affect them on the field or learning lifelong skills. I've had the wonderful opportunity to be able to take a class during an after-school session at the King Career Center, which allows students to have a similar experience to what this bill would do. During my time at King Tech, I took a culinary class, and I can tell you that it was a fun but enlightening time. It was incredible to be taught by someone who is super knowledgeable in their industry for years, although I can say culinary isn't for me, but not because of the cooking, but it's the environment. The kitchen is loud, fast-paced, and you have to be able to communicate well. I've learned I prefer to take my time and perfect every little thing. Those are the type of experiences I want to go through because I, for one, and I'm sure others like me, don't know what they want to do after high school, and it's hard to know what to do next. Getting these hands-on experience and developing a passion in a career that they otherwise will not have access to or be aware of could have a huge impact. It could also prepare students to have an successful future in an often overlooked industry in Alaska. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Cothran. Do committee members have questions? Not seeing any. Next up in invited testimony is Don Etheridge. Mr. Etheridge, would you like to come forward and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Co-Chair. Don Etheridge, I'm here on behalf of the AFL-CIO and the Alaska Works Partnership, and both organizations are very supportive of this legislation. We think it's important to start reaching down and start training some of these youth a lot younger than we have been in trying to get them into the trades, because we are running real short on tradespeople nowadays, and we think it's a good idea to give them an example of what the trades look like. I know these kind of programs help kids that are still in school big time. I know of two kids that would probably have never graduated if it hadn't been some kind of program like the house building programs that give them an idea why you need to have math skills and some of the other skills that are there. And I think this is a good opportunity to make this program work, and it helps the kids, and it also gives us some future tradesmen. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Etheridge. Do many members have questions? Not seeing any. Next up in public testimony is Jim Anderson with the Anchorage School District. Mr. Anderson, please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Anderson, and I'm the Chief Finance Officer for the Anchorage School District. I'm testifying naturally in support of House Bill 108, as it will help more students become career and life ready immediately upon graduation. This bill strengthens the state's focus to provide high school students an opportunity to receive industry standard training so they'll have viable skills for a trade. The bill further stresses the importance of partnerships with businesses in areas that may not have state certified apprentice programs. Anchorage School District has been building business partnerships for several years. These training and internship opportunities with businesses have helped many students develop skills that allow them to join the workforce immediately upon graduation or shortly after. We've partnered with several dozen businesses and programs in nearly two dozen distinct career fields, including just some of the following: art design, biomedical, telecommunications, carpentry, veterinary assistance, welding, and many, many more. Students participating in this program do receive course credit for their time, effort, and acquisition of new skills. As a side note, these partnerships have generally been available at little or no cost to the district, as it is a great opportunity for employers to build pipelines for their future employees. There might be some transportation costs to support student travel to and from these opportunities, but frankly, ASD looks at that as a really minor investment in helping these students prepare to join the workforce. In 2019, prior to the pandemic, we had 126 students participate in intern programs with our partners, and another 190 students participate in job shadowing. We're still rebuilding the program as the pandemic slowed down many of these opportunities, but we're aggressively renewing our focus to build partnerships in the community, and frankly, meet many of the needs and requirements stated in House Bill 108, because again, it's an investment in those students who don't plan to go to college as their career choice. So ASD fully supports House Bill 108 because it supports one of our three board goals, and that is it ensures students are life, college, and career ready upon graduation. Barring any questions, that concludes my testimony.
Mr. Anderson, thanks for being here. Thanks for your testimony, and thanks for sticking around to offer it. Next up in public testimony is Paul Grassi with the Ironworkers. Mr. Grassi, thanks for being here.
Mr. Chair and the committee, I'm Paul Grassi. I'm here today actually on behalf of Anthony Ladd. He was actually the person that was invited, but he was unable to make it because of prior commitments. So the Ironworkers support this bill, and it's probably not going to be, we're not the the participants in this plan or in this program probably won't be able to get on the job sites at 14 because of federal rules. But it will produce candidates for the Ironworkers at a later date. They'll be able to develop skills that are transferable to the Ironworkers and to the other trades as well. But I think the main thing that this will teach, and the most valuable transferable skill, is they're going to develop a work ethic, an ability to show up every day to go to work the time they're supposed to be there, and come back the next day. This seems to be one of the things that people don't learn at a young age now, for some reason. Anyway, because of that, we fully support this bill and urge you to pass it on to the next committee.
Thanks, Mr. Grassi. Are there questions from committee members? Not seeing any. I think our final invited testifier is either Adam White or Tom George with the aircraft owners and it looks like we have two more testifiers. First is Adam White with the Alaska Airmen's Association, and then we'll go to Tom George with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Mr. White, please proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Obviously, there's a lot of support for this bill from a wide range of folks here in the state. The aviation community is very supportive of these kinds of measures. We are actually seeing some of the repercussions of a shortage of workers right now with Alaska Airlines and some of their issues they've had over the weekend. And a lot of it falls down to just simply not enough people to do the job. The Alaska Airmen's Association has submitted some written testimony from our next gen group, which is a small subset of our membership here in the state that is focusing on the younger generation, trying to work with school districts and get things going for programs there. We do partner with AOPA, which Tom George was a part of, and sounds like he's on the list today to testify as well. COVID obviously messed with a lot of our plans. We had everything in place to start traveling around to rural school districts to show some aviation-type curriculums and try to work and get some, a lot of these things going in the school districts, even then. But, really appreciate, all of you taking the time to consider the bill. And, it's very obvious to me anyway, with the number of folks that are testifying in support, that, this is a well-deserved and needed, movement in the right direction. So.
Thanks, Mr. White. Not seeing any questions from committee members. Next up in public testimony is Tom George with the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Mr. George, please proceed.
Thank you. My name's Tom George. I'm the Alaska Regional Manager for the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. And yeah, I too would like to speak in favor of House Bill 108 and this notion of concurrent vocational education and on-the-job trade experience while enrolled in public secondary schools. As Adam's already talked about, we have a dire need for more pilots and, for that matter, mechanics as well. We think this bill will help provide more opportunities, both in the classroom, but as well as for some on-the-job exposure to this career early on and help people get hooked, for lack of a better term. As you know, aviation is certainly a critical component to our transportation system in Alaska, and training pilots and mechanics here who are already used to living in the state has potential benefit for meeting our in-state labor needs. In the interest of time, I'll stop at that point and be happy to answer any questions, but very much support this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thanks, Mr. George. Not seeing any questions. I think Deb Riddle with DEED is online, and I might turn to Ms. Riddle for a question if she's available.
I'm here.
Okay. Ms. Riddle, could you help me understand how is this going to look operationally for a school district where you have an apprenticeship program or some other kind of CTE program that wants to deliver some training, I guess, in person in a school? What's the school district going to go through to bring that training on site?
For the record, my name is Deborah Riddle, and I am the Division Operations Manager for the Innovation of Education Excellence at the Department of Education and Early Development. When districts already have these types of arrangements in place with industry partners within their areas, this legislation provides a little maybe more defined how that relationship could be organized. It just helps them organize the contract language of the memorandum of agreement that many districts already have in place with with industry partners within their area. You know, to help them create programs that kind of go back to the community and can help provide the workforce that individual community might need.
Thank you, Ms. Riddle. And I don't know if Jim Anderson, the CFO of the Anchorage School District, is still online, but Mr. Anderson, if you are online, Mr. Anderson is not online anymore. Okay, do any other members have additional questions for Ms. Riddle or any of the testifiers? Not seeing any. Mr. Hornet, do you want to go through the sectional analysis?
Yes, I can do that.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Fields, if I may, for the record, my name is Eugene Harnett, staff to Representative McCarty. This is for CS House Bill 108. Section 1 adds an instructor of students in a concurrent trade, vocational education, training, on-the-job training experience, or apprenticeship to the list of individuals who must have a national criminal history record check performed. Section 2 as to the duties of the Department of Education and Early Development, that they must provide schools and districts with opportunities for students to participate in concurrent vocational education, training, and on-the-job trade experience programs to students over 14 years of age enrolled in public secondary schools. Section 3 adds 7 new sections to AS 14.35. Article 2, concurrent vocational education, training, and on-job trade experience programs. Section 14.35.100, state policy. New policy of the state to provide public secondary school students over 14 years of age the opportunity to participate in concurrent vocational education, training, and on-the-job trade experience programs from non-sectarian agencies providing industry standard certification or instruction. Section 14.35.105, Program Contracts. The school district shall negotiate contracts with agencies providing industry standard instruction and certifications to offer concurrent vocational education training and on-the-job training experience programs for students enrolled in public secondary school. The department may establish minimum program eligibility standards. Additionally, this section provides contract guidelines and states that a school district may not contract with a sectarian agency. Section 14.35.110, Program List, requires the school district to annually compile, provide to school districts, and publish to the department's website a list of concurrent vocational education, training, and on-the-job trade experience programs that the district contracts with. The district must also identify any geographical attendance restrictions and program availability for each listed program. Section 14.35.115, Student Enrollment, requires that the school district permit the enrollment of a student in a contracted concurrent vocational education, training, or on-the-job trade experience program who is over the age of 14 years of age, who is enrolled in the public secondary school eligible for the program, and who submits a timely application. If the number of applicants for a program exceed capacity of the program or age group, the school district shall select students by random drawing. A secondary school shall pay the program tuition for an enrolled student who participates in a contracted concurrent vocational education program in accordance with the terms of the contract. Section 14.35.120, Individual Learning Plan, requires that the secondary school create an individual learning plan for each student enrolled who participates in a contracted vocational program in collaboration with the student, parent, or guardian of the student, a school counselor, and any other individuals involved in the student's learning plan. The individual learning plan must also provide for an in-school and concurrent vocational education program course of study appropriate for the student's age and grade level, consistent with state and district standards. Provide for an ongoing assessment plan that includes industry standard certification progress and statewide assessments required for public schools. Provide for monitoring of the student's work and certification progress by the counselor assigned to the student. Section 14.35.125, Instructor Certification, requires that an instructor of students in a concurrent vocational education training or on-the-job trade experience program possess a valid instructor certificate and an industry standard master skills certification or equivalent. Requires the Department of Education Early Development to submit fingerprints and fees to the Department of Public Safety for criminal justice information and a national criminal history check. The department may not issue an instructor certificate to a person who has been convicted of a crime or an attempt, solicitation, or conspiracy to commit a crime involving a minor. Section 14.35.130, Definition, defines school district or district as a borough school district, a city school district, or a regional education attendance area. Section 4, amends the supervision requirement for an employed minor on to include an adult, parent, sibling, grandparent, aunt, or uncle. Section 5 lowers the allowable employment age to 16 years of age. Section 6 extends the hours of the day a minor may work to 10 p.m., but does not exceed 23 allowable work hours in a week. And Section 7 provides it for an effective date.
Thank you, Mr. Harnett. Not seeing further questions from committee members, thank you, Mr. Harnett and Representative McCarty for presenting the bill, and we can return to this after the budget. I believe that concludes our business in labor and commerce today. So at 4:25, we are adjourned.